Hi, this is JD Slackard, and you're listening to the FSF Popcast.
The show that reminds you that we weekly throw all of our dumbest ideas and thoughts out into the universe. You're welcome.
Our show is brought to you by our charity sponsor, the Red Shirt Widows and Orphans Fund, which supports the Wish Upon a Teen Foundation that helps out sick kids when they need it most. And just imagine the comfort you'll give Red Shirt crewman number 128. You'll know that when he puts on the red shirt and joins Phoenix on a journey in discovering the light, that he didn't leave his family destitute and without hope, because the Red Shirt Widows and Orphans Fund has his back and what's left of his library books.
All right, so our guest today is an author of several books entitled Moonflower, Joining the Choir Invisible, and his latest, Darling, You're Not Alone. He's a former college basketball player, and hopefully at some point we'll get an explanation of what the heck a gaucho is, but we'll see. We are very excited to welcome JD Slackard to the FSF Popcast. Welcome to the show, JD.
Guys, it's a pleasure to be here. I'm excited to be on the podcast with you both this evening, but honored. Excited to dive into hopefully some fun topics and talk about the books and about my sports background. And I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, absolutely. So, hey, let's just jump right into it. So let's start off by talking about some of life experiences and journeys taken. Now, through other interviews that I've seen of you, whether in video or in print, you've talked a lot about a young man named Luke Bodden and your experiences with him, his family, the Luke Strong Foundation. So how does that relationship, A, affect you as a human, but B, in your profession as a writer?
Yeah, my goodness. I mean, it seems like for me, the real core essence of who I am as a person always goes back to Luke Bodden. And I really wouldn't be doing what I'm doing today had it not been for this incredibly brilliant young boy who just inspired my whole life. I'm pretty open and transparent with the fact that, I grew up in Los Angeles, California, and I was kind of a knucklehead student, and I didn't really care about much anyone but myself when this girl came up to me after one of my high school basketball games. So I was about 17 at the time, and she came up to me and introduced herself and said, "Hey, my little brother is your biggest fan and he wants to play basketball with you." And as I said, I was a bit of a knucklehead. So being that kind of cocky kid I was, I sort of just looked at her and said, "Sure, like, I'm sure there's a lot of people that want to meet me and play basketball with me. You know, I'll get around to it when I can." And that was when she actually turned and said, "No, JD, it has to happen next week." And I asked her, why do I have to meet your little brother so soon? And that was when she looked at me and said, "Because my little brother is 6 years old. His name is Luke. And the last thing that he wants to do before he has to go into the hospital for a full year of isolation for a bone marrow transplant is meet you and play basketball with you." And oh, wow. Yeah, I mean, and Luke had something called sickle cell disease, which at the time I was very unfamiliar with. But as I, came to become close with him and his family, I got to learn all about it. And yeah, Luke really changed my life. And that moment when, you think about this, like think about being 17 and having someone say, they're your biggest fan and that the last thing that they want to do before they go into the hospital is see you and meet you. And it was incredibly humbling, man. I ended up just sort of building this bond with Luke, and I ended up going to the hospital and seeing him all the time. And we had this incredible bond and friendship, and he would like talk trash to me too about my games, because you wouldn't believe it. Like knowing that he had gone to every single game, he was sort of aware of like how many points I'd scored, how well I'd played. And I'd sometimes talk to him about my games, and he'd be like, "Yeah, well, if you hadn't missed that layup, you could add, 30 points instead of 28. And yeah, just this nappy personality that me and his family talk about to this day. But, Luke's story would get better after he made it out of the hospital. So after he had his bone marrow transplant, I committed to UC Santa Barbara and went on to play college basketball there after high school, which for those of you maybe that geographically aren't as aware of where I live, that's only about 2 hours away from where I grew up in LA. So Luke would go and commute with his family to my college games then. And really for the next 3 years, we just did everything together, celebrated birthdays together, We would get his favorite food was pizza, so we'd get pizza together after all my games, and he got to know all my college friends, and yeah, I mean, it was really just like a dream come true, and I had my biggest fan with me, and tragically, and you know, it's obviously breaks my heart to this day that only 3 years after his bone marrow transplant, now he was 10 years old, he passed away due to a stroke and complications from that procedure. And yeah, it was obviously just a completely heartbreaking and life-changing thing. But you know, I sort of had that real shift, as I spoke about, kind of being that knucklehead kid, into, you know what, like, I need to do more with my life, and I need to put some passion into the things that I'm pursuing and going after. And it was only, you know, until after Luke passed away that I decided to become a writer, and that's when I sort of changed from this athlete into an author, and you know, I'm doing everything I'm involved in today. So
did you have interest in writing beforehand, like while you were playing? You know, because I know, like with some writers we've talked to in the past, for some there was a time when they took a shift, like you went from being an athlete to an author. But there was some before that actual shift of lanes. You know, they would find themselves like, you know, like some artists before they became artists would doodle on notepads and stuff.
Yeah,
and,
sure.
And some artists, or some writers rather, would write out little short stories here and there. And you know, did you find yourself doing that, or was it just like one day? Because I'm the farthest thing from it. I can write like functional pieces of information, like if you need a proposal written to somebody, yeah, I can do that. But something that's going to be engaging and entertaining,
right.
Yeah, I'm probably not your guy for that. So I, you know, this that's why I asked. Were you a writer ahead of time, or was it just kind of there?
You know, it's an interesting question, and it's one that I think I've only come to understand later in my career, after having now written a second book, because initially I think it was even shocking to me how naturally I fell into novel writing. I mean, I really did just go into full book. Like, I hadn't written short stories or anything, and I wasn't getting like great grades in my writing classes in college. And I mean, I wrote my first book while I was in college still. So I was like turning in essays and getting C's on them while I was like working on a novel, which was pretty ironic, I guess I would say. But to really answer the question more directly, though, is what happened was I was always writing letters to friends, and I had this real kind of interest in taking the time to write handwritten notes to friends of mine pretty consistently, like for birthdays or when they were, you know, just, you know, holidays. I would spend time and write like a 3-page letter to every good friend in my orbit for Christmas, and I would deliver them. And I never really thought that was interesting or odd or different until I had a really great friend who was studying abroad. And she actually was very close with Luke as well. And I used to write her letters all the time to update her on how he was doing. And it was strange, man. Like I almost found myself, and I can, as I like sit here and speak with you guys now, this is 8 years ago, and I can imagine exactly where I would go to write these letters. And it was like the best day of my week was to sit down and write these 2-page letters. And I would write them so frequently that this girl couldn't keep up with trying to respond to all of them. And it was then that I almost just decided, like, maybe I should stop writing letters to so many people that I know and write a book. And pretty soon after that, I did. And yeah.
Cool.
Instead of writing individual letters, you're writing one big letter.
Yeah, one
everybody.
Big letter. Exactly. When I handwrite all my books, and that's a big part of my process. And that's sort of what that was born out of, right? So I started handwriting letters to all these friends. And then, my one long big letter was a handwritten copy of a first draft of a novel. And yeah, it was 400 pages of just pencil and paper.
Nice. So in the foreword of your book, does it say dedicated to all y'all?
Well, what's funny is my first book, I dedicated it to about 16 people. And nice. My editor was like, you know what, I've never really seen that done, but I suppose that's not, you know, there's no rule that says you can't do that. And I didn't really think that was odd until the book was released and I saw it and my dedication page was like, you know, the whole thing. But that's, you know, I was 22 years old. So I think at that age, you know, you got a pretty big friend group. You got to try to, you know, make sure everyone's happy.
Yeah.
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 I almost think it would be funny if an author literally like made this person, but like had like a whole bunch of people to where like the entire book was just like his thanks.
Yeah.
Each person.
It's like a 5-page book, but there's a 75-page thank you. I mean, yeah. I spent some time, I think, I want to say after my, when I was looking to for the dedication for my short story, Joining the Choir Invisible, I actually did a little research on like the coolest ways to do acknowledgements of books. And I read some really fascinating ones. Like I think it was James Joyce did one of his books. He had the acknowledgements was dialogue between him and a good friend. And he stuck it right there as like the conversation that led to this idea for a book. And I've always actually, you know, a bit of an aside, taken a fascination in that. Like, I kind of love to think outside the box with the projects I create. And I try to take advantage of the space of writing in a way that's different than maybe other authors think about how to, like, I like to break the rules, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. And I think the acknowledgments page is a really free-flowing blank canvas as the author is allowed to put whatever they want. And in Moonflower, my first book, one of the last things that Luke ever said to me was to smile more. He used to always tell me, JD, if I had all the problems that you had and I got to live your life, I would smile all the time. Like, I would never complain. And so in the first page of Moonflower, it's entirely blank. But in the corner right, it just says smile more. And I say that in speeches that I give and talks I go to high schools and things because, man, is there really anything more important than to smile more and to remember how lucky each of us are? And I feel like out of that entire book I wrote, that's the thing that sticks with people the most. It's just a little two words in the beginning. So I try to think about creative ways to sort of give the message I'm hoping to in a different way.
Very cool.
So speaking of your process, my father is an author as well and has written quite a few books himself, mostly in the science fiction realm.
Very
and,
cool.
That's one of his books, Custodians of the Cosmos.
How did that get here? Oh, sorry.
Love it.
But so I understand like the wanderings of an author's mind and
yeah,
how they
right.
tend to work out when they pound out a story. So in your process, do you more often come up with the story idea first and then build the characters, or do your characters are there and then build the story around your characters?
That's a good question. I've actually never thought of it like that. I think more often than not, I do think it's both, to answer your question. I think more often than not, though, the story idea comes first, and then it's putting the characters into the world of which I'm creating. Like, I know for Darling, You're Not Alone, which is a magical realism novel that I've just came out a few weeks ago. I definitely had the idea for the story before I planted the characters into this world that I've created. And that sort of was built on like one of the main points of the book was, you know, the main character Phoenix is 15 years old. And that was a very deliberate decision because I needed him to be able to be mobile throughout his city as a part of the plot. And that was something that I thought about a lot, because initially when I had the idea for Darling, You're Not Alone, I wanted him to be about 10 years old or 9 years old, because I loved that age. And I thought that was a really interesting kind of free, like a sort of, there was a purity in that age where you don't really know the darkness of the world yet that I was hoping to create. But then as I thought about how I wanted to appease and attack the story of Darling, You're Not Alone, I realized I needed him to be older. So it's like, I think your characters shift depending on the limits with which you're building your story. So if that kind of answers your question, I think that's something I consider when, you know, coming up with a book or anything like that.
Yeah, I was listening to another podcast that you're on, and you talked about your process a little bit more, how you literally like handwrite your entire books. And I got to thinking, have you ever thought of using a digital pen?
You know, I mean, look, it's always a sticking point with people when I talk to them about how I handwrite. And believe me, like my team on my end, like my editors and managers and publishers and, you know, that whole kind of back end side of the books, really hate that I handwrite. Like, they are on me nonstop about, they're like, man, you need to just do without that. Like, we're in the year 2022, and like, there are a lot of different ways you can do this. But I, to be completely honest with you, that's my favorite part of this whole thing. I mean, I love that moment of, you know, I was actually just with a great friend last night, Nietzsche Federico. He's a up and coming author. He's releasing his new book in a few weeks. It's his debut. And I've been sort of mentoring him. And I was joking with him about how really, like, my ideal scenario is being at a coffee shop, having that second or third espresso, no phone, no computer, blank page, pencil, and just almost taking in the sounds around me without any way of interrupting my train of thought, and letting that just creativity kind of, I don't know, blossom and be unencumbered in terms of anywhere I can go. And you'd be, I mean, I don't know, it's very meditative. Like, it's very freeing for me in a way that it's both like healing, I guess, in my own world as like a therapeutic method. And it's also how I write. So yeah, I think the digital pen, I mean, I guess I could flirt with that concept, but I don't know. I don't want to break up my meditation, but.
Oh no. Like, I think you can still write with the pen. It just records the strokes that you make.
It goes straight onto like a Microsoft Word or.
Yeah. Like into a digital format. So that way you don't have to take out your iPhone and like,
yeah, take the photos. A picture of, yeah, each page. You caught that. Yeah. That, cause that's step two. Step two, right, is then I have to go to technology, take pictures of it, and then I upload them onto the screen and I transfer them. Maybe, you know what? Maybe I haven't looked
into them that much, but I knew they existed. And I was just like, huh, that's a neat way you could.
Well, I'll tell you another, and you know, maybe you heard this too, but another part of the process for me is I can physically see my progress. And I think when I'm handwriting it, I can see pages 9, 10, 11, 12, and they're right there. Like, I can physically touch them. And that's a big part, I think, of my motivation to keep going. I mean, it kind of reminds me of like when you're in middle school and they say, put the M&Ms on each paragraph you read. So as you go along, you get like little rewards. That's almost like my way of doing that for myself, is I can, if any days I'm feeling like, man, I can't soldier on, I'm running out of energy, or I'm tired, I can just look back and see, you know what, I'm 30 pages into a novel. Let's just get to 31 today, and then 33 tomorrow, and 36 the next day. And like, that's sort of, I don't know, it's how my mind works. And I don't want to mess with that, but.
Hey, you do whatever you need to do. But.
Yeah, I won't listen to them that keep telling me to stop. I'm gonna keep trying to let, you know, talk my way through it. But
hey, if that's your creative process and that's how you get the magic to happen, you don't want to mess with that too much. You know, that's the process.
We'll see. As long as I can continue to control my own universe here, I will be handwriting. But. The naysayers are out there for sure.
I'm sure. Yeah, it is 2022. I get the especially on the technical side of things, going, really, paper, pen, really, is what we're doing.
Yeah,
but yeah. Yeah, I get it. All right, so hey, JD, let's talk about the book that you have the picture up behind you, Darling, You're Not Alone. That's the newest, the latest, and greatest. So tell us about, you know, for our audience, tell us about the book. You know, what's the story, the basis behind it, how it came about, and what this latest offering means to you personally?
Yeah, I mean, it was a severe undertaking. It's a book that took me 3 years to write, handwrite as well. And it's a novel that is set in the year 1999 in the small town of Darling, Colorado. And the main character, who's our protagonist, who we follow through this story, his name is Phoenix Ivor. And Phoenix is someone who is entering his first year at Darling High School, which is sort of the local high school that he can walk to and is sort of right in his neighborhood. And he's sort of going through like these very ritualistic happenings that we all can kind of relate to, of being a high school freshman and meeting new people and dealing with, you know, like the town bully and sort of the math class that maybe you should have signed up for the algebra 1 instead of algebra 2, and it's just sort of setting the stage of this landscape. But Phoenix is sort of someone that deals with a bit of darkness in his own life in a very personal way, being that he suffers from social anxiety and sort of like this depression. Because of this, he struggles to make friends and have sort of the proper outlets in order to help him acclimate to Darling. But he has this incredible bond with his father named Herman. And the thing about Herman that's very important is, in the beginning of the story, we learn that he used to be a police officer, but for some reason he's no longer that. And he's actually the security guard at Darling High School. So he and Phoenix spend all this time together and walk to school together. And Herman's sort of Phoenix's best friend. But Phoenix is trying to follow sort of the mystery of what happened to his father and how he lost his job and why now this person who he sort of like revels in and looks up to and relies on is just a security guard at a high school. And that's a really tough thing for Phoenix to grapple with, as like he kind of gives up on this world being like a magical place when just on the brink of discovering what actually happened to his father, he walks into the library at Darling High School. And instead of two students holding books that walk in behind him, they're holding handguns. And Phoenix endures and has to survive what at the time of the book is the worst school shooting in U.S. history. And Herman is very involved in the, you know, the saving of the kids. And it's a very kind of obviously incredibly traumatic, yet oddly timely with the world we're in now, landscape. And then the remainder of the novel from that point, and I won't say too much about what happens next, is how Phoenix has to sort of not only deal with the sort of trauma he inherits in the beginning of the story, but he also has to then move forward beyond, you know, suffering this catastrophic event. So Darling, You're Not Alone really is this examination of how do you live on and believe in the light in the world when all you've seen, known, and felt is the dark? And Phoenix is the character that has to answer that that very question.
Cool. All right.
Yeah, and it's a look, I mean, it's a book that took a lot out of me to write. It's one that is a very intense read, and one that I think is a powerful book, being that it does approach like a very real topic. But I think it's one that's also very hopeful, and one that I think anybody going out, you know, anybody out there is dealing with maybe a tough time or is going through some sort of transition. Because, you know, when I was sort of building the story in my head, it sort of was like I sort of had the back end of the book already figured out, and you could almost sort of remove the tragedy of the first half, which is the school shooting, and then substitute it with your own. Like, you know, I lost my home in a fire in 2019. And, you know, obviously as we spoke about, I lost my friend to sickle cell disease. And it's like, I think a lot of people know, you know, the book is sort of about this idea that like, that's sort of actually what connects all of us, is we've all sort of dealt with something that seems completely just out of this world, absurd and terrible. Yet here we are trying to put a smile on our faces every day and try to believe the world is a good place. And I really do think it is a good place. And this book is about that concept. And that's sort of where the title, Darling, You're Not Alone, comes from, is like, look, as terrible and as isolated as we feel in dealing with these things, that is actually when we're most connected, is trying to come together and heal each other and love each other, despite maybe something that we've all gone through.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. I think it's nice when books are able to help us deal with the actual realities of life around us, because this is a topic that we have to talk about from time to time, unfortunately. You know, I mean, just last night in the United States, there was the shooting in Virginia.
Yep.
And so having the opportunity to have, and fortunately for young adults, to be able to have it being written in a frame and a mindset that maybe that they're familiar with, might be able to help them be able to navigate some of these discussions in their head. So I'm hoping that book has that ability to have that outcome where it's, you know, able to help maybe shape, mold some ideas.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I couldn't have said it better myself. I just think, I think the best way to handle heavy topics sometimes is through this fictional element of where, you know, this event in this book actually never did happen. But it is a way for me to come on to your guys' broadcast and talk to your listeners about something that is actually happening often, unfortunately. And
yeah,
that is one of the reasons why I wrote this book, was to give me the platform to hopefully try to help heal and, you know, bring a discussion to the table that is one I think is very important, because it's, you know, it's a really sad reality. And I think that one of the things I attempted to do with this book and this project is, and not to take away from anyone who is directly impacted by, you know, a school shooting, but I think one of the things I wrote about in this project is, like, what about all of the people that are living in the town nearby, or have a kid that, you know, had to come home that night that was, you know, maybe wasn't directly involved, but suffers from some sort of trauma later on, or sure. The teachers and just the community as a whole that have to suffer these things. And I do think, like, books are such a long and arduous and they take so much time to create that I don't really feel like I'll ever be involved in a project unless it does have that real world impact and ability to hopefully make some good beyond the story. And that's something I'm very passionate about. You know, the other authors that I love, like John Green, mm-hmm. I feel like they do in their work. You know, Mitch Albom is another writer that I try to model a lot of my style off of. And these are guys who, you know, approach heavy topics and do it in a way that hopefully leaves you with a little more inspiration. And yeah, I think it was a severe undertaking, of course, but it's one I took very seriously. And, like, I actually went and visited Columbine High School and got to, you know, visit the Columbine Memorial. And man, I tell you, the strength in that town and the people that I met in my travels there while I was writing this book, it's amazing to see how much people can deal with and still remain positive and talk about and learn from. And I don't know, it's really inspiring in a way too, as terribly sad as it is as well. But
yeah, understood.
So speaking of entertainment and how everybody on the earth uses some form of entertainment to escape the reality of life, and oftentimes in these forms of entertainment, we see the light side, we see the dark side, and we even see the gray side. And sometimes we can even empathize with the so-called villain in the story.
Yeah.
So how do you, or have you in the past, used, like, storytelling or within your speech to entertain people and help them to see the light, the dark, and even the gray?
Yeah, I think I attempt to do that in a way where I give a real longitudinal look at the space. Like, I think it's like, I think about with Luke, right? Like, in the moment when I lost him and his family lost him, we were devastated, obviously. And it was, I mean, you know, to have to bury someone that young is so heavy and so difficult. But Luke is the gift that continues to give now, 6 years later. And I can now travel all over my hometown to what was his elementary school, what would have been his middle school, and what would have been his high school. And I give talks every year about the lessons he taught me, the, you know, how he used to jab at me about my jump shot being, you know, not as good as my teammates, and how much he loved pepperoni pizza. And it's like, in some ways, Luke has never been more alive now in 2022 than he's ever been. And he is so well known and has created such a movement of good that it's empowering. And that's something I speak with his mom about, who I talk to almost every day. And she's sending me texts like, hey, good luck in your interview tonight, you know, with FSF Popcast. And I'm like, thank you. You know, and it's, I think when you, you know, to answer your question, like, I think when you look at it in such a long-term way, it is beautiful sometimes what can come out of tragedy. And, you know, Luke's family went on to found the Luke Strong Foundation, which is a registered 501c3 nonprofit that supports children diagnosed with sickle cell disease. So we're actually out there meeting other, what we call other Lukes, and giving back and trying to make a difference in this illness that is severely underfunded. And, you know, wow, how many beautiful things could have been kind of bloomed out of this tragedy. And I think I try to share that with people, is like, look, it may not feel like it now, but someday maybe there's something good can come from this. And I forget where I heard this quote, but the quote, and the, you know, it sort of encapsulates this idea I'm trying to create, is when something bad happens to you, instead of saying, why did this happen to me? Instead, ask yourself, why did this happen for me? And it's just changing your perspective and thinking about how you can take maybe what seems like a terrible thing and turn it into a good one.
Absolutely. And I think that's awesome that you see that and you look at ways that you can flip that perspective.
Right.
That's always good. We call it in my family, we call it looking for the silver lining. I have a chronically ill daughter. So we're always looking for ways to, you know, find the silver lining in whatever it is that's going on. Because, you know, if you don't find that, it's going to be, life's already difficult. Whether you're pristinely healthy or not. If you can find the silver lining in things, it's going to make life a little bit easier.
And we all can do a better job of that. And we all fall out of that too. Like, I think sometimes we can forget how great we really have it or how lucky we are. But it's these reminders. And I think, you know, to tie it all in, that's what I'm trying to do with the books I write, is like almost give this sort of little nudge, like, hey, smile more, you know, don't think about, you know, how bad you have it when you really are lucky. And I think that's sort of Phoenix's journey through Darling, You're Not Alone, is like his idea of trying to search for that in a very honest way, where in the beginning of the book, he feels like the world is just coming down on him. And by the end of it, I like to think that he sees exactly what we're talking about. So
fair enough. Okay. And now a word from our sponsor. Since 1982, Vital Signs and Graphics has been helping professionals with all their image, logo, and design needs. Perhaps you're looking for signs and banners, truck and trailer lettering, business cards, brochures, or other image and marketing aids. Vital Signs and Graphics in-house design studio has you covered. From logos to apparel, start to finish, Vital Signs and Graphics has everything you need to look and feel professional. Call Rick at 231-652-3300. He'll get you noticed. Welcome back to the FSF Popcast. All right, JD, let's talk about basketball and writing. So these two things
may not... My two favorite things, and coffee.
There you go. Yeah, you got me on the third one, that's for sure.
Yeah.
You know, many people may look at your life course and say, well, these two things, they don't go well together, basketball and writing, being an athlete and being an author. But these are both parts of your personality at this stage in your life. So how does one, because I look at being an athlete and the training and dedication and hard work that goes into being an athlete, especially at the collegiate level, how does all of that translate into helping you be an author?
It's a great question, Tim. My athlete side of me is kind of comes out in here and there, and I probably suppress it a lot, but I think it is still very alive in my competitive nature. But I think the best way I can answer that is, you know, I think most people that maybe see my career and where I ended up and my end result probably assume, like, oh, you know, I was always sort of this, like, you know, well-recruited, dominant player from Southern California where I, you know, was very successful. And I actually really don't remember my career being like that at all. And I remember being this sort of undersized redhead who was just, you know, had allergies and was on the last guy on the team and was just loved the game. And I remember those days a lot of just falling in love with being in around a group of guys that I loved and cared about and wanting to win no matter what position I was in. And I think that idea and mentality is what led me to writing and my idea of loving the sort of, you know, pick yourself up by your bootstraps and just write every day and no matter what terrible reviews you get, which I get plenty of those too. I mean, there's so much sort of that does mesh with my writing and athletic career in that way that you have to be very bullheaded and sort of just power on no matter what. And that's a really important skill, I think, as a writer to take on, because not everyone's going to like what you write. And you can't let that affect your style or the way with which you write. And, you know, no matter how many people tell me to handwrite, I'll never stop that. So it's like, that's that sort of stubborn athlete in me, I think. And I like to think too that there's so much, I wouldn't say on the fly, but I guess I would say sort of flow state you get into as a player, where you can do all the prep you want and go through all the game plans and do all the practicing. But the minute that game starts and that ball goes up, it's you and the person in front of you, and you gotta read and react. And writing is very similar too. Like, you could have the best outline and the best idea, but the second you get onto that page, you got to fill it in from 1 to 365. And that flow state, I actually feel very similar to as when I'm playing in a game versus when I'm writing a book. I feel like they're the same type of thought. Like, you almost just sort of go to another place. And I think that's how I sort of feel like they bridge in my two past lives into one.
So interesting. So like in sports, you have to stretch and do all these things before you get ready to play. Do you like do finger exercises to keep, you know, from hand cramping?
You know what's funny, man? The way you guys are ribbing me right now, which I love it, is that's like exactly how my former teammates are. They're like, you know, hey, did you pull your wrist muscle today while you were writing? And they like love to just throw. Like, I was with a former teammate of mine last night, and he was laughing about it. He's like, man, I would have never put you as the guy to write books from our basketball team. And it's funny, man. I love it. Because what's cool too about that, Tim, is like, I'm very open about the fact that had I not had a really loud 100 people in my early part of my career, I would not be where I'm at now. And that those a lot of those people were my basketball sort of family, I would say. Mm-hmm. So all those guys are like, they were the ones going out, handing out copies of my first book, saying, hey, like, go buy this, go follow them, go, you know, write a review. And man, I owe everything to my teammates and my basketball family. But I mean, to get ready to write every day, I actually have a record player that I listen to every morning. Nice. And it's Bon Iver, For Emma Forever Ago. I listen to that album every day. Nice. And that's sort of like my meditative, get into my flow state. I do a lot of hot yoga as well. So I've got all my little rituals that I do.
Have you tried cold yoga?
No, I've not.
Neither have I.
maybe that's the Michigan. I'm in the Southern California.
In Michigan, we just walk outside now. So
yeah, it was 60 degrees today and I was pretty cold. So
I have some words I'd like to share with you, but I don't share those on our podcast. So
I was going to say, did you pull a bicep lifting your notebooks?
Yeah. Well, look, I should get a little bit of cred from you guys, because I actually did at one point live in New Hampshire in Phillips Exeter. I went to boarding school and that was pretty north and that was pretty cold, but that was only for about 9 months. So I came right back to the warm winter.
And screw this, I'm going home.
Yeah.
All right.
Exactly.
Hey, fair enough. I've tried to move out of the winter states myself. My wife said no, so we're still here. So love you, honey.
So we all get to where we are in life because of the world around us. Either the way we are shaped by circumstances or the assistance from family and friends. But so one way that we receive assistance is through advice and encouragement, usually when it's given, when it's needed most, or 2020, or not that 2020, I meant like hindsight's 2020. But
right. We needed it in 2022, don't worry.
Yeah, we for sure did.
What is one piece of advice that you received that you would like to get the next generation of authors to have as well, besides smile more?
Yeah, it's a great concept. Let me try to think. I think what I would say my biggest piece of advice is, no matter how, like, if you feel like there's a book inside you and you really want to write it and you feel sort of this desire to put it into the world, don't let the discouragement of your really truly your own inner voice take that away from you. And especially when you write that first draft and you feel like it's terrible and it doesn't match anything that you initially set out to do, I'd say that's a very normal and just a part of the process it takes to write a book. And you have to be willing to work through bad draft after bad draft after not so bad draft after a little bit less worse draft, and to wait, this is actually decent. And that takes time, and you just have to be persistent with it. So I would say, don't let that discourage you, and be okay. And like, you know, 50% of people that sit down and write a book can't finish a first draft. So if you overcome, and even if it's a terrible first draft, you're already well on your way, and you can make it better and get it into the right hands and have great editors and great people that slowly over time, and you just have to be persistent. So my advice would be just to continue to fight through maybe that discouraging first draft, because it does get better as you move along.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Nice advice. All right, JD, one last question. We like to call it our silly question. And don't worry, there's absolutely positively no way that you won't piss somebody off with your answer.
Cool.
But we are a nerd and pop culture show, so we have to know which side of the aisle your nerd flag flies on. Are you Star Wars, Star Trek, or Stargate? Which one and why?
So what's funny is I did a bit of research on you guys before I hopped on, and I actually was getting prepped in my little pre-interview kind of, you know, while I was listening to my album, my record player, I was getting prepared. So my dad, who is like one of my best friends in real life too, is a huge Star Trek fan. So okay. I'm not even going to go against him in any way. And I'm just going to say Star Trek. But I have to be completely honest with you. My knowledge about any of the three shows you just named is minimal, but I just go with Star Trek, being that that's my dad and I got to stay with him. So yeah, there's my answer for you.
Fair enough. The Star Trek fans love you. The Star Wars and Stargate fans hate you. So don't worry about it. You got it there. Star Trek's a big universe. You'll have a lot of fans over there buying your book. Cool. So it'll be fine.
And the Firefly fans are just,
they're just disappointed that there wasn't a complete first season. So,
well, look, Star Trek is very important to my father. My father is very important to me. Therefore, Star Trek and I, we really have a bond like that.
Great
and, that's where JD Slackard lies. I'm happy to stay on that team.
There you go.
So because Ensign Kim never gets a promotion, you and your father have a great relationship.
There you go.
Yeah. Oh yeah. He's steered me right in many more ways than I've steered myself. So I'm gonna follow his lead on that.
I feel like that was a whole lot funnier to people who enjoy Star Trek, but.
Look, we got to get my dad on the show. He would have a great time talking about Star Trek with you guys. Trust me, I might even just try to find him, you know, soon and invite him in here. But
well, JD, thank you so much for being on our show today. Where can our listeners go to find out more about you and your upcoming works? And where can they go to help support the Luke Strong Foundation?
Yeah, for sure. So for the Luke Strong Foundation, you can go to www.lukestrong.org. There's tons of information on how to donate, be involved, and help out. And it's incredibly giving and amazing charity. And I'm also a part of, I'm a director of relationship development for the Luke Strong Foundation. So you can read more about that there. For more information on me and my books, please visit jdwritesbooks.com, where you can there purchase any of my books, Moonflower, Joining the Choir Invisible, or Darling, You're Not Alone. All of those books are also available on Amazon and Barnes and Noble and wherever you can find books at. And for more information specifically on Darling, You're Not Alone, please visit darlingyournotalone.com, where there's more information about this letter writing campaign that also accompanies the book. And there's a way for us to sort of interact. And I can sort of, you know, you can upload your own letter that you write. And there's a whole letter writing kind of concept and movement we're starting with that. And then for my publisher's website, www.summerhousepublishing.co, for more information there. And then on Twitter and Instagram, you can find me at JD_Slackard. Throw me a follow, interact with me, tell me what you like about the book, talk to me about Star Trek and maybe educate me on that, whatever you guys are into, find me there, man. But honored to be on the show, guys. You guys are amazing. And the FSF podcast is where it's at. So
thanks, man.
Excellent. And that is Luke, L-U-C, not L-U-C.
Yeah, L-U-C, Strong. Yeah, Luke. Yep.
All right, cool. We want to remind everyone that subscribing is the single most important thing that you can do to help ensure that we get more amazing guests like JD Slackert here today, so we can have these funny moments for you to be able to listen to. So please subscribe. It helps well more than we'll ever really be able to tell you. And be sure to go check out JD's work as well. And please go check out the Luke Strong Foundation. That they're doing some amazing work over there for a disease that still needs a lot of help for people to be able to have a healthy and happy life. But if for whatever reason you are not happy with the content of our show today, please feel free to lodge a complaint with the head of our complaint department, JD's editor. He found out that we do all our writing in pencil as well. The editor is out there looking for errors and issues, and what better than a podcasting troupe that specializes in errors and issues that need to be edited out? We really are an editor's dream. Or nightmare. Either way, they're both dreams. So just send two copies of your complaint form. The editor will make sure that our mistakes are stricken from the record and that we are highlighted for the mistakes that we are. Don't worry. Although we're used to hearing and used to bearing the burden of our own embarrassments, it will be different when it's brought to you by a professional. Or at least that's what we're hoping.
Well, thanks again, JD.
And that was Thank wonderful, you so much. Guys. You guys are amazing. Thank you for having me. I hope all the listeners out there loved it. And yeah, check out the books. Excellent. Let me know what you think.
Will do. All right, guys, that's going to conclude us today for the FSF Popcast. Goodbye.
Ciao.
On behalf of the rest of the hosts of the FSF Popcast, we want to thank you for listening to this episode. If you'd like to be a guest on a future episode, please contact us by means of Twitter or Instagram using the handle @FSFPopcast. Or go to www.fsfpopcast.com and click on the contact me link. Thanks again, and hope you enjoyed the episode.